Hi, Anthony. Welcome. This is part one of a parenting, part six, seven of our series here this fall. And it, this has been a subject near and dear to me, and I don't have kids anymore that are at home. So, Grace lives with us for the time being, yeah. But it doesn't take long to have this in my heart again. Actually, somebody, I think it was Pat Sokol, who said, you really don't know how you have done with parenting until you see how your grandchildren are doing. And I like that because what needs to happen for our kids is that they understand what has to happen. It's one thing to have forces acted upon you. It's another thing to own it and carry it on out for life. So here we go. Hi, Nick. Welcome. Why don't I, since Nick is here, why don't I pray? Yeah, welcome. Everybody has paper, pencils, and okay. Well, let's pray. God, we thank you tonight again for your word, and as I often say, when people say your word doesn't say much about this area, I just totally disagree. Thank you that your heart, I mean, Jesus, you said it this way, unless you become like a little child, you're not even going to get into heaven. Really, really, really important, this heart of a child. And so tonight, I've got a structure here, and I trust it's good, but we ask you to fill in all the hidden things, all the unspoken things, either through questions or just by your Spirit communicating directly. So bless us here tonight, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Rick Whitney sent me this a month or two ago, and it's very long, and I will not read the whole thing, but I just want to start with this. A lot of people wonder how Chinese parents raise such stereotypically successful kids. They wonder what these parents do to produce so many math whizzes and music prodigies. What it's like inside the family, and whether they could do it too. Well, I can tell them, because I've done it. This is a mom writing. Here are some things my daughters, Sophia and Louisa, were never allowed to do. Attend a sleepover. Have a play date. Be in a school play. Complain about not being in a school play. Watch TV or play computer games. Choose their own extracurricular activities. Get any grade less than an A. Not be the number one student in every subject except gym and drama. Play any instrument other than the piano or violin. Not play the violin or piano. That's what she had them do. I am using the term Chinese mother loosely. I know some Korean, Indian, Jamaican, Irish, and Ghanaian parents who would qualify too. Conversely, I know some mothers of Chinese heritage, almost always born in the West, who are not Chinese mothers, by choice or otherwise. I'm also using the term Western parents loosely. Western parents come in all varieties. At the same time, even when Western parents think they're being strict, they usually don't come close to being Chinese mothers. For example, my Western friends who consider themselves strict make their children practice their instruments 30 minutes every day, an hour at most. For a Chinese mother, the first hour is the easy part. It's hours two and three that get tough. Despite our squeamishness about cultural stereotypes, there are tons of studies out there showing marked and quantifiable differences between Chinese and Westerners when it comes to parenting. In one study of 50 Western American mothers and 48 Chinese immigrant mothers, almost 70% of the Western mothers said either that, quote, stressing academic success is not good for children, or, second quote, parents need to foster the idea that learning is fun. By contrast, roughly 0% of the Chinese mothers felt the same way. Instead, the vast majority of Chinese mothers said that they believe their children can be the best students, that academic achievement reflects successful parenting, and that if children did not excel at school, then there was a problem, and parents were not doing their job. Okay, and article is very long. You get the point. I would say that represents good parenting, but it is not excellent parenting. And we want to get into why that is and what is better. But I want to offer this disclaimer. This is not about Christian families, kids not excelling in anything. That's not what this is about. It's not about Christian kids not excelling in anything. I think it would be an honor to the Lord if our kids would excel in everything that they possibly could. But there is a different focus. And so that's what we want to get into tonight. Number one on your sheet, godliness is the goal. I actually was thinking of this long before I read that article. I was actually thinking of this. It becomes a goal of many Christian parents that their kids be an academic success, or that they be musically talented, or sports star. Any one of those, and that's fine, but it's not the goal. It's not the goal. Many unbelievers can do that. We have something different to display than just that. And so, this is going to be difficult without my Bible, isn't it? Yeah. Deuteronomy 6. I was going to read more of this. I thought of that when I got here, that I left my Bible. Let's see. I wonder if I should shorten this by just... No, I think I should read a little bit more here. Let me... Grace, what version is this? Okay. I'm sorry. I should have remembered my Bible. Okay. We'll start in Deuteronomy 6. And indeed, I do want to read 9 verses here. And then we'll go back to your sheet. So in Deuteronomy... Moses was kind of reviewing some things there in the wilderness, things that they should remember. These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you are going to cross the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live, by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy long life. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in the land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of our fathers, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, and when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands, and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses, and on your gates. Those are the first 9 verses. In verse 5, I want us to notice, with godliness being the goal, that it starts with dad and mom. You shall love the Lord your God. You shall love the Lord your God. Be in love with God. The first part of developing a godly family and having godly children is for us to be in love with God, to love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our strength. If that's going on with parents, it becomes just a process of carrying it out with the kids. The flip side is also true. If that's not going on with parents, we're pretty much starting from below zero, pretty much starting backwards. So it starts with dad and mom being in love with God. But in verse 7, that's where he said, you shall speak of them when you rise up, when you lie down, when you're walking along the road. Talk the word, talk the word, talk the word. So this point B there is instructing from this heart. the way to get to the goal of godly children is to instruct from the heart that is in love with God. So I've said this before, and I think it's a challenge. But then again, if I'm thinking correctly, it's not a challenge. That if I am in appreciation of my salvation, all these things flow. As Romans 12 says, I urge you therefore, brethren, I urge you. How do I urge you? I urge you by the mercies of God to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice. God's mercy motivates us. It motivates us. So first we're in love with God, then we instruct from that heart. And then in verse 2, does anybody have anything but the NIV? I am so sorry, I should have brought my NAS. I'll just read the NIV once. Are you going to look for NAS?
Well, I could pull it up.
Okay. In other words, it's ancient, but I'll try to find it. No. No, let's see. Verse 2. So that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live. This is an intergenerational godliness being the goal. The word there on your page is intergenerational. This is one of the things. Yes, sir, Anthony.
I'm sorry, I've got to ask. Why are we supposed to love God and fear Him?
Oh, very good, very good, very good, very good. What do you think of when you think of fear?
Running in terror.
All right, that's what the word means. But if God has spared you from eternal damnation by putting it on His own Son, now what kind of a relationship do you have with this one that you used to fear? You love Him, but do you flippantly love Him or deeply, appreciatively love Him? Yeah, the second choice, that's right. And so, and that is why we never minimize the greatness of the God that has saved us. That's what would be irreverent, to become flippant about what He's done for us. And he continues being very personal with our lives, uncovering areas we never knew existed that we need to turn around, that we need to yield to Him. And we reverence Him. Oh yeah, that is important. That is important. And what we're going to get into here tonight, when we talk about Proverbs 2, it starts very young with our children. We can actually give our children this reverence for God before they even know He exists, and bless them in a big, big way. Did that hit your question? Why are we supposed to, how are we supposed to fear the one that we're in love with? Think of the word respect. That might be an easier word. Yeah, respect, deep respect. When you get deep, deep, deep in respect, then it's sort of a fear at the same time as love. You want to add to that, Tim? Okay. I think this was good enough. We wanted to get to the intergenerational aspect, and I just had missed it here in the NIV. It's an intergenerational godliness is the goal. Okay. Would you do verse 2, please, of 6? Yeah. Yeah, so there, Anthony, he kind of alluded to it there too. Fear the Lord your God so that you may obey Him. Yeah, to keep His commandments. And in any relationship of intense love, you really care what the person you're in love with cares about. And you're that's to the point where you're afraid of, I really would not like to forget about something that they care deeply about. And so that's a fear with love at the same time. Really amazing. Point number 2, you, parents, are key. And for those of you who've heard my story in this, I'm sorry, it's the same old story. But when, I think this is maybe before we even had kids, going through Proverbs, And you'll see this over and over and over and over again in the first 9 chapters, especially first 7, 8, 9 chapters, the term "my son." Now that's not that big of a deal, except who can say "my son"? Who can? A father or a mother can say "my son." Only 2 people. "You're not my son," you know. "There's my daughter. She's not your daughter. She's my daughter." This is what Proverbs 2 says. "My son, if you will receive my sayings and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. For if you cry for discernment and give your voice for understanding, if you seek for her as for silver and search for her as for hidden treasure, then you will discern the fear of the Lord." And all of that made sense except that one little word, my son. See, what was going on in my heart and my mind was, well, what if I'm not a real good dad? What if I just don't know what I need to know, and maybe somebody else is better? Doesn't that sound like what we see in our society? The experts. Don't trust yourself, parent. You trust the experts. Anytime there's a problem in our society that involves kids, the experts are pulled in. Why? Because we trust the experts. And what I was seeing is the experts aren't there. In God's economy, parents are it. Parents are God's plan for godly children. Remember, the goal is godly children. Parents are the key player in that. Yeah, the term "my son" there is your A point, "my son." And it's repeated over and over and over again. Guys, I've said this so many times, but Proverbs, most of Proverbs, the thrust of Proverbs is for kids. It's for raising kids. Solomon wrote most of these Proverbs, and kings and queens came from nations quite a ways away just to listen to him. We have what he wrote, and we minimize it. And I think that it just, there are a few things that really get my goat. There are a few things that really churn me on the inside, and this is one of them. When the experts are pitted against what God has given us, that kings used to come for miles to find out about, because that's how unique it is and how precious it is. What is in Proverbs, much of this wisdom of raising godly children, of aiming at godly children, is the content of Proverbs, and it is what is missing in the experts' language. They care about self-esteem, and God cares about godliness. So, my son is a critical thing. Parents, you are the key player here. B, sometimes the problem with raising kids is not so much the rebellious nature of the kids as it is with the failure of parents to require respect as being in the place of God to raise kids. What I mean is, it takes a long time before a young child understands much about God. They're just not able to. But they know who you are, and they can respond to you. If a parent does not play this role as if he or she is in the place of God, they do their kids a tremendous disfavor, because then the kids will have to wait at least a decade to learn how to fear the Lord, if they ever do at all. If a parent requires, no means no. The child, without knowing any of the language of the fear of God, understands something way before they have a mind to be able to theologically. Tremendous, tremendous point. Proverbs says, why is there a price in the hand of a fool to buy wisdom when he has no heart? How do you give your kid a heart? You give your kid a heart by playing the place of God, which is what he set up so that your child would learn godliness. You tell the child what is allowable, what they must do, what they may not do, and you enforce it, and you help your child morally, mentally, spiritually. But parents are the key player in raising godly children. Point number three. Discipline is a part of the process. It's not everything, but it's a part. Honestly, I think some of us 30 years ago used to think it was almost everything. We did a lot of disciplining, and I'm not ashamed of it. At all. I think it benefited our kids, but I'm just saying that we did have some of us anyway. I'll speak for myself. Had the mindset that that's about all there was, because I thought so highly of the point we just went over. I saw what happened when I required respect. And what I mean by requiring respect, maybe Tim will get into this some next week, but what I mean when I talk about requiring respect is I say what must happen. I wanted to have my kids come when I said come one time. Come. If they did not come, I disciplined them because I wanted them to come when I said come. That's what I meant. And I taught them the fear of the Lord, and we gained a good relationship. You know, they know who I am, and they respond to who I am. And I got in a lot of trouble with relatives about it. But the same ones that I got in trouble with are very, very thankful now. So, what do you know? God was right. Discipline is a part of the process. I want to ask the question, why? Why does discipline have to be part of the process? And see on your sheet. Yeah. Proverbs 22:15. Did I put that in your sheet? I'm sorry. Proverbs 22:15. Yeah. Okay. Before that? Okay. Let me answer this question first, the Proverbs 22:15. It says this, foolishness is in the heart of a child. Foolishness is in the heart of the child. I do not believe I ever spanked my children in anger because I understood what I was doing. I was loving them. I was removing them from something they couldn't wriggle free of. Discipline was bound up in their hearts. Here it is. Foolishness was bound up in their hearts. You know what that looks like, don't you? They're just on a goofy plane. One of my children, the more I tell this, the more we know which one it is always, but I disciplined him more than all the others put together. Because foolishness was just in there. And he told me even later, he just thought it was worth it. He was going to get another spanking, but at least he got to do what he wanted to do. And it's crazy, but foolish. I think he'd be an axe murderer if I had not removed folly, at least at moments in his life. That is why discipline is necessary, because foolishness is bound up. They're helpless. Can't get rid of it. They can't remove it. That's why it is so critical. So your C there, you know what? I need to do this A, don't I? Fathers, do not exasperate your children, but bring them up in the discipline. That's your word there, in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Discipline's part of the process. I am suggesting that we give our kids a tremendous benefit morally, as we said there in point two, morally, and a head start in fearing the Lord by employing discipline. Will you talk about this some next week, Tim, the disciplining? Yeah. Tim did down in Ames, and I thought it was very good, so we'll get into that a little bit more next week. All right. Next point is that relationships, this is a close quote of Josh McDowell, Relationships and Gender Beliefs, which form our values, which dictate our behaviors. Josh says that with his kids, if he sees them doing stuff that they're not supposed to be doing, he'll tell them, hey kids, do you know I love your mother? And they say, yeah, Dad, it's obvious. Do you like the relationship your dad and mom have? And they say, yeah, 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 I'd like it. And he tells them, well, you're not going to get there that way. And he goes on to expose their the area of sin, but he has a relationship with them that this is meaningful. Relationships and gender beliefs. And this is what I come to when I put these things together. Without discipline, you build a phony relationship. In your conduct, I mean, there are proverbs about this, that a child who gets his own way brings grief to mom, bitterness. And you're still mom. So you still, oh, it's, I love him, I love him, I love him. Yeah, but you can only go so far along that road. By carrying out this instruction and this discipline, we build an open and a relationship of mutual respect. I think I have that down there on point A. The benefit of diligent, patient, consistent discipline is to build a relationship with your child. Kids know whether they're pleasing you. They know. I sure did. In some ways, my dad was hard to please, but I always, always wanted to please him. It was so good when I knew I had. Sometimes he would brag about me to the veterinarian. That was my high day, you know, how I cared for the animals, you know. And I wanted that to go on, but it just couldn't. I was a sinner at the time, and Dad had his anger. I'm saying, though, that if a relationship is kept clear by having this framework with our kids, they know what's expected, and we have enforced it. Now we have an open relationship. They know that, you know, after you do your discipline and you sit and you comfort them again and you tell them, hey, that's over with, we're moving on. And by the way, I really appreciate what you've done here. Name what they have done that is right, and they continue to go down that road until the next time. But anyway, you're building an open relationship. You are building a relationship with them that is real. It's not phony, not built upon, you know, love as if love is the absence of justice, but real love that includes a requirement to obey. And I have one more point here on relationships, and that is that we need to lead them into godly living. As our kids, you know, we've studied this back there in Ames when all those years I was working with our youth group back in Ames, we recognized this over and over. It was real painful statistic, I guess, that our youth group kids that would come on our Wednesday nights, if their parents, I could almost say it this way, to the degree that their parents were involved with the church family, their kids were able to benefit from youth group. To the degree the parents were not involved, the kids would come for the social gathering, and maybe with a couple exceptions, maybe just a couple exceptions. And maybe one of them would be my son-in-law, honestly. They're just about two out of all those years whose parents were not attending our church, whose kids remained faithful. But even in that case, John's parents are godly parents. So we need to lead our kids into godly living. So when it comes to youth group, for example, we stressed this back in Ames, that we'd have parents involved. It is commonly thought that kids resent that the parents are always there. statistically, studies have been done, and it's usually not the case. Usually, kids appreciate their parents being there. They wouldn't want to always even say it, but especially looking back, they would appreciate it. Here's why. They are able to see in their parents 20 years down the road of their own life. They're able to see what it looks like 20 years down the road. In my case, 27 years down the road. What it looks like for someone to still be walking with the Lord. And that is extremely valuable. So I'm suggesting the second point is that we lead them in godly living. And that would include being involved with them. I appreciate what Tim's got going on there with the store, with the whole family, really, but with Rex and Nina in particular. I always preferred this. I took Tim to work with me. I think he was 3 when I started taking him to the hog farm with me. And he did some pretty good work on the hog farm. Then I moved to Iowa State. And he had to pull back from it because of an accident, and he could have been really badly injured, and he just had to change some things. But I knew this. This is how you raise families. You keep them together. You keep them with you as much as you possibly can. What I had to do, since I couldn't take my kids to work nearly as much, is I had to join them. So that's when sports entered the picture for my family. I didn't know anything about sports, but I had to learn. I actually learned to enjoy it. Tim, first it was baseball. And I remember how I just had to force myself to go out on the lawn and throw this ball back and play catch with Tim, because it seemed like such a waste. There's so much I could have been doing. And I am throwing an object. And it's mine too. I learned to really love it. That is fun. I don't know what it is. It's just fun. And then it was football. We had a neighbor who was he's a Nick kind of a guy, and he loved to play football, so we played football. I kept my relationship with them in that way. Grace, I learned to dance, right? No, I didn't learn to dance, no. Relationship is key. An open relationship. And I study families when I go places. I just look at how the kids relate to their parents and so forth. And what I'm looking for is that connection. How involved are dad and mom with the kids? Because that's a harbinger for where things are headed. And we know that here. Our goal is young families. You guys may need to become them. We'll probably have quite a few others as well, but that's one reason we're glad you're here, even though you don't have kids. This will still be relevant when you have kids. So relationships are important. Next point is understanding supports patience. Understanding supports patience. Sometimes we get frustrated with our kids, frustrated with the process, frustrated with how long it's going. It's many, 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 many homeschool parents will say, you know, they've done really well with this one and this one, and then they get the next one, and nothing works. And they're just pulling their hair out. That's point A there. They're all different. Treat them as having unique skills. That verse there in Proverbs 17:27 says, a man of understanding has a cool spirit. If you have understanding, if you have room, if you're able to look at each individual life and be able to assess, look, they're not as far along as so-and-so was, but I'm going to stop comparing, and I'm going to ask myself, is that one where he or she should be? I will require progress of all of them, but I can extend some understanding if I don't see this level by now. And society judges us as well, but I'm suggesting, well, the verse says it, understanding makes us able to be cool with them. Point B, this is a Proverbs 27:23 again, know well the condition of your flock. I put this in here because For some, I think our last child, learning came fairly easily for him. And I'm still kind of waiting. He's a freshman in college. I'm still kind of waiting for something to get really hard for him to find out whether he's a disciplined young person. If I am looking at his life, though, the point is, let's pretend he was not an eager learner, or an, Grace was had difficulty learning some things. And I do remember, thinking, I know how to teach. You just drill and 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 drill. That's all I knew about teaching. You got the formula, and you drill it. And I would go over and over and over and over things with Grace, and she would just look at me with those little baby face eyes, and it wasn't working. If I got frustrated because my goal would have been that she would be trying, that I knew that she was giving it 100%. In other words, I would be. That's when I'd be frustrated. I could extend that understanding to her if it was a problem with me, and I just didn't know how to teach. But know well. Know what the faces of your kids are. Know what, you know, when Ariana sticks that bottom lip out, you know what that means. You know what's going on in the heart. I hear Tim told her to do it. No. No, you know your faces, and you know what is a stubborn face, and you know what is an honest face. Know well. It's a way of having understanding so you don't have to blow a cork over every small issue. C, training is a key factor. And by definition, it takes time. That's what training means. Training means doing something over and over and over and over again while you're perfecting it. That verse in 2 Timothy says that the Word of God is for training. So it's going to be a long haul. That's my point. So just cool it. Don't get bent out of shape if something doesn't happen right away. I'm not indicating that we shouldn't get help. We did. We had to get help. Homeschooled for a number of years, and I just determined that we needed some help. So we got some. But did so after looking it over carefully and applying understanding, I felt. Point six, community empowers purpose. Community empowers purpose. I make this statement, if what we do at home is valuable, then what we are as a company is powerful. And this is something that Tim and I have been wanting you younger kids, younger men and women, to understand. Tim says it this way, you are the future of Lifehouse. Also, we would say, we want through you for God to raise up a culture. This, did I put 1 Peter down here? 1 Peter 2.
Yeah, 2,
5,
B, 7,
7,
B.
Oh, that's not the right one. This is 1 Peter 2 would be what? To be, maybe it's 1:13. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may on account of your good behavior glorify God in the day of visitation. That's what we want. And it kind of takes a community for that to be a bright light. Community empowers purpose. So, the verse that I put down there, I think in B, yeah, encourage one another day after day, lest any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. This is, Kristen, how often do you meet with other homeschool moms, for example?
A couple times a month.
And is it useful to you?
Yeah.
If for no other cause, and I'm just picking on homeschooling as an example. That's not all there is to raising kids either, but it's a hard one. It's a very all-consuming one. And we can bear one another's burdens. This verse says we encourage one another day after day. It takes courage. It takes courage to keep going when it is like Grace was having trouble that it described. It takes a lot of courage to keep at it, keep at it. In this article that I didn't read all of it, but the piano player had difficulty with one difficult piano piece. And that mom made her do it over and over and over and over again, much longer, admittedly, than any of us would. And then it broke for her. She got it. And she said that both she and her daughter sat on the bench, on the piano bench, just giggling. She was being hard, and her daughter felt it, and her daughter was, you know, very frustrated, but she pushed through it. Well, there are things like that that we do need to push through or make some other decision. You know, if I'm using this homeschool thing again, if the kids aren't learning, you have to make a different decision. But anyway, in all of life, I'd say one of the biggest things is discipline, honestly. That in our years raising our kids, this would be the thing that would come up the most often. What do you do when he does this? And what do you do when you're in public and this and they do this? Sometimes you need to get somebody's advice on it, you know. I had trouble with some relatives. What do you do when you have trouble with relatives? And I just answered as calmly and pleasantly as I could. I knew what I was doing. I knew why I was doing what I was doing. But we need to encourage one another. It's scary business. You don't like to be at odds with your relatives, you know. So it takes courage. So community empowers purpose. And so get this down in your minds, young people. Commit yourself to the local church for the rest of your life. You need it. It needs you. Just settle it. You're going to be here. And if and when you have your children, it'll be a blessing to you. And the last point is to pray with authority. And I don't mean this to be trite at all. It's not trite to me. But if I just said pray for your kids, I'm afraid it would mean something different to you than it means to me. I put some verses down here. In point A there, Jesus commanded that we use his authority in our prayers. He said, until now, you haven't asked for things in my name because I was always here. Now I'm going to the Father. Ask in my name. Let's see. Ask and it will be given you. It's repeated twice. John 16:24 says that your joy may be made full. Your joy may be made full. But the point is, ask in his name. It is his name which gives authority to the request. Well, in 1 Peter 2, those two verses, both of them talk about a priestly duty. One is a holy priest. Verse 5 is about a holy priest, and verse 9 is about a royal priest. The holy priest deals with sin, and the royal priest deals with the nations. But the idea of a priest is that a priest represents people. He has authority for people, right? We understand that. And God put it that way. God made it that way. I've been reading through, you know, I'm in the one-year Bible. I've been reading through Leviticus and Numbers again, and the law, you know, is just very, 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 very involved about what the priests may do, and they are the only ones who may do this. Anybody else tries it? They die. God doesn't mess around. He gave those priests a job. And he wanted them to do it. They were his representatives, so to speak, in what he was trying to picture through the law. And my point is that it is we parents. There are 6 billion people in the world, but only one dad, one mom for every child. I have more leverage in prayer for my kids than anybody that I know. Because I'm the only dad. I didn't decide it, guys. I didn't make it this way. He gave me authority. I'm just going to use it. That's all I'm saying. I don't know why this is so goofy for me, but I did not think about this until about, 15 years ago. I was out. I think I was taking a day alone with the Lord. And I was at the Ledges Park. I know exactly where it was. I was walking. I was trying to pray. And sometimes that can be hard, you know, praying for people on my team. And I didn't know what to pray. And I was getting a little frustrated. Then I started praying for my kids. And I thought, this is it. This is it. I know what to pray for my kids. And it just flooded me, this understanding that, of course it makes sense. I'm Dad. I'm the one who's primarily responsible. God set it up that way, and I started believing that my prayers would have impact. That does not mean that I told God from then on what to do. It's not what I'm saying at all. But I am saying that when I say, God, I'm Dad, please bless Grace, something happens. I'm Dad. And God is God, and He is good, and He wanted to bless her anyway, and He was just waiting for me to believe Him for that. I ask Him for mercy for them. I ask Him for their spouses. I ask Him for their days, what I know about their days. I have a plan. Pray for them daily. Pray a little bit on the weekends, a little bit longer. Every month, pray a little bit longer. Once a month, I pray a little bit longer. Because I have this office. I am Dad. God made me in authority. Authority was always for blessing. Always, always. In God's mind, authority was always for blessing. And I'm just going to bless my kids. I'm just going to play my role. That's what I'm going to do. I've got two married kids, and I've instructed my son, who's married, and my son-in-law. Okay, it's your job. I'm not going to pray for them as much, but you better. I made a specific announcement to them one day, partly because it was taking so long to pray through my whole list when I had my longer time in prayer. But we also have a parental authority over our kids. There, point C is we have a parental authority. Ephesians 6, you remember how that goes. Says, fathers, we went over this, do not exasperate your children, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. What does verse 3 say? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. This is the first commandment with a promise. That it may go well with you. We have authority to let it go well with our children. That's what I get from that. I've described it. But I tell you, this has been so big for me. And I probably will see sometime how many things have been averted, dangers have been averted, or I don't know, it's just big. I didn't make it up. This is what God did. And so this is the role that a parent has. So those are just a smattering of thoughts. There are a lot of approaches to parenting. I've read some books, some I appreciate, some I don't. But this is how I approach it. You have to know what the goal is, and these other things support that goal. That's how I came up with these things. So, pretty small group. But if there are any questions, it'd be really fun to bat some around.
So 7.C, we also have a what?
Parental.
Okay, so what's B then?
Oh, I'm sorry. We have a priestly authority as believers. First Peter says we have a priestly authority. And so we also have a parental authority. The priestly authority is just given by God. Well, so is the parental authority. 3C? Did I skip one? Oh, yeah. I kind of rambled over this, but disciplining small children helps them learn the fear of the Lord long before they know who He is. They don't know who He is. But you can sure program them. You can sure get them ready. I just let's see. Sarah, we kind of think maybe just got saved. Not this Sarah. But notice, or let's use Cornelius. Here, we talked about it Sunday. Notice how he feared the Lord? It did him well. It got him ready. It wasn't anything in the way. That's what I'm saying here. How we discipline our children, how we work with them, gets them ready for that point of salvation. It's sort of pre-discipleship, I think of it as. Mark Darling used to say, we condition a response when we're disciplining. Josh? How are my grandkids doing? Sometimes really well. they're pretty young. Tim was just telling me some things this morning that one of them is doing and was kind of asking about that. And I mentioned, you know, at some point, this is the kind of thing that will lead them to salvation, the discovery of their own wickedness, you know. So, they're a little young for that, but I tried to hone it into identifying what was going on in the heart of the child, what was being exhibited by the outward actions. Because you can only discipline the outward actions that you see, and so it has to be identifiable. Thoughts? Do you have suggestions? Kristen?
So much of what I'm hearing you say is a call to the parents to take their role as a parent seriously. Seriously, I mean, you're right, we are in a culture where we delegate or we just release the kids to the, whatever, public school system or an authority of this or that.
Yeah. Exactly.
We turn them over to others to train our kids. And you're, so much of what Charles is saying is like, no. You are the one that I designated uniquely to parent your kids and to help raise them up in the place.
Yeah. If I heard Tim correctly. No. sorry, playing around with last week. No, I really, really think that is true, and statistically, it proves out across the board. There have been tremendous youth group leaders who have done two things. They've followed up on kids that have done very well, and they've bemoaned the fact that so many don't do well after they leave their little group. And when they follow up on the ones that are doing really well, one particular author I read said it was a bad day for him. It was like a slap in the face. This particular, I think it was a girl, she said, well, honestly, I would have turned out this way whether it had been in youth group or not. Because my parents, and she went on, it was her parents. And the ones, thank you, Grace, and the ones that... More often is the case, and this is what we experienced so often back then when I was in youth group. We would, my son was fairly gregarious, and we'd invite kids all the time, but after they leave youth group, they're gone. And it's because, you know, one of the most important factors in teaching is always a respect factor. In learning something, you have to respect the one who's teaching in order to really learn. And that's part of what we're saying here, too, is we're building that respect factor into our kids. And it's just not there readily, at least, in a professional. Any others? Okay. Let me pray, and then Tim can give us a teaser for next week or whatever. Father, these aren't my ideas, and I am so glad they aren't. I just thank you how helpful it has been to my life to be dad. Because you require so much of the dad. You put so much responsibility on him for the well-being of the kids. And it's a lot more than just providing. So I would ask you here, we've got some young people here, and they're not even married yet, but it won't be long. Even if it's 10 years, it's not long. And then we'll be at it. God, I ask you that you would raise up in Lifehouse a culture where the parents do take it seriously because you do. So use things from here. Use these verses. Speak to us individually. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Bob. That's fantastic.